Music Live starts now. Woo! On Talk Radio 680, WCBM, and 99.9 FM in Harford County.
All right, good morning. Happy Tuesday to you. My, oh my, the time is flying by. Is it really December 3rd? What happened to this year? It is already gone before you know it. Hopefully you did find some good deals yesterday for Cyber Monday. If you haven't checked it out, WCBM, we've got some merch for you. If you want to check it out, we've got the 2025 Kim Classic Live calendar. And we've got all of these other things as far as mugs, shirts, you name it. Check it out. And while you're at it, check out WCBM.com in general because our website has been updated. And it looks really good. So congratulations to Jonathan, our social media guru. You've done a great job with it. Again, it's WCBM.com. Also, real quick, if you haven't already, download the WCBM app. It is free in the App Store. That way you can pick up and go, whether you're leaving your car, leaving your desk at work. You can still listen to every show here at WCBM. All right, we got quite a show in store for you. I'm hoping that we have enough time for everything. I mean, there's a lot to talk about. Of course, over at The View yesterday, you had the host weigh in on a Hunter pardon. You've got Marilyn Mosby asking, look, if you're handing out pardons like candy, can I get one? And attorney Ben Crump thinks that she should have one as well. Karine Jean-Pierre, our special press secretary, did respond because, of course, everybody was talking about the fact that Joe Biden said that he would not, absolutely not, pardon his son Hunter. And then that all just went out the window. So I'm going to get her response to you so you can have a listen to that. Also, Shermichael Singleton, a friend of mine, he is one of those lone Republicans that likes to get beat up on the CNN panels. Well, he absolutely nailed it yesterday when it comes to Hunter's pardon. And I want to play that clip for you. Also, in studio at 10 o'clock, we've got Glenn Gilhar. We're going to talk about what's to come, or what we believe will be to come, in Annapolis this next session, and then also about his race here in 2026. I know what you're thinking. You're like, Kim, we're still in 2024, but for Republican to win, you got to start early. And I can tell you, Glenn Gilhar has been knocking doors like I've never seen before for years now. And he has been getting to know everybody in his district. And this is the kind of work that needs to be put in my view, if you're going to win here in the state of Maryland. So we're going to talk to Glenn at 10 o'clock live in studio. You'll be able to call in and ask Glenn questions as well. Also, we're going to talk about the car thefts in Maryland. We exceeded the national average. I don't have to tell you that. I know you probably already know. But we're going to talk about how much we've exceeded the national average because, you know, time and time again, we do hear from local leaders that we're on this national trend. And when we see the crime, the violence, the carjackings, the, you know, robberies, we're told that it's, you know, it's just something that's happened all across the country. Well, they can't say that anymore. They can't do that anymore because it's not a national trend. It is here, and only here in the state of Maryland. Now, do you have some states out there that also has very progressive elected officials that might be in the same predicament that we are in? Yes, of course. But here in Maryland, I would say we're probably one of five states that is just seeing an uptick in whether it's carjacking, juvenile crime, you name it. It is about the failed leadership here in the state of Maryland. So we're going to talk about that. Also, 12 names. We got 12 people that have thrown their names in the hat for Baltimore County Executive. Like I mentioned on the morning drive there with Bruce Elliott and Sean Casey. I know about at least six of those 12 names, and I'm happy to see the direction, at least, that people seem to be going in, and that is because they're all more competent than Baltimore County Executive Johnny Olszewski. So we're actually headed in the right direction. Now, will we get there? I'm not certain. But we're going to talk about these 12 names also with Glenn Gilhar because he's, you know, right in the thick of that as well. And then, of course, gas prices. We're going to talk about those. Have they gone up? Have they dropped? I'll let you know. First on the list here, we're going to talk about the pardon. If you ever want to weigh in, don't forget, it's 410-WCBM-680, 410-922-6680. Also, if you have that app, you can text me live in studio, and I can read your text here on air. I wanted to just start with the ladies on The View, okay? As I mentioned time and time again, I watch so you don't have to. But I want to play this clip for you because, of course, The View hosts have done a complete flip-flop on Hunter Biden. Not all of them, a few of them. But I also think this is important because it is clear that the elite, right, the Whoopi Goldbergs of the world, who believe that VP Kamala Harris was going to win without a doubt, who believe that, you know, they were convincing people across the country that President Trump was in fact a Nazi, right? They thought all of these things. Well, I want you to hear what she has to say about the Hunter pardon, because if this was President Trump pardoning Don Jr., we would not get this feedback from Whoopi Goldberg. So take a listen.
So the question is, will people understand? Listen, I get it. I mean, we got a convicted felon as president.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. It's hard for me to.
Yes. And
I know that you know who's been asking, you know, are you going to pardon the January 6th folks? Actually, probably not. But I kind of feel like I look at the list of folks that you know who pardoned during the first term. He granted 237 acts of clemency, 143 pardons, and 94 commutations, including Michael Flynn, Roger Stone, Paul Manafort, Charles Kushner, Steve Bannon, George Papadopoulos, Al Pappiero, Ella Wei.
Everybody.
I forgot about Lil Wayne.
Yeah. Lil Wayne. So it is a president's prerogative. Mm-hmm. You know, people can say, oh, why are you doing that? But that's what presidents do every time. They do it every time they pardon somebody. So I'm not sure why the pearl clutching is happening now, except that that's what folks want to do. But it seems kind of foolish. You kind of knew he was going to do it, given all that's happened, but maybe I'm just kooky.
So I see this one a little bit differently, and some of you know this, but I grew up with an immediate family member who was in and out of jail for addiction-related offenses when I was growing up, and now, a decade later, clean, have their life together, serve their time, are still dealing with the consequences. Inability to vote at time, paying restitution, working to get your record expunged, not being able to be eligible for certain employment. Most Americans, if they face consequences for actions that they took, they're going to have to face them. And nobody powerful and politically connected is going to come sweep in and save them. And I think, A, this feeds the notion to a lot of this country that there's simply a different set of rules for folks in power. And when we sit here and we say a lot like, well, Donald Trump did X, Y, and Z, and how did he get elected? Because to a lot of this country, it just becomes noise. They think that if you commit crimes and somebody powerful and connected in D.C., right, left, center, Biden, Trump, you're going to be able to get away with it if you have someone on your side, and that's not how it is for everyday folks. Secondly, I take issue with lying about it. I wanted to ask him here when he came on The View, but the thought was he said so many times he wasn't going to pardon him. That to me is lying to the public. I felt bad for Karine Jean-Pierre that she repeatedly had to say that he wasn't going to pardon him. Just this is why people don't trust Washington. That's why they don't trust politicians. And I know a lot of us like Joe Biden, but I find it disappointing and bad for our institutions.
And as you heard there, Alyssa Farah, she gets it. She gets it. Now, remember, she actually used to work in the Trump administration, and then January 6th happened, and then she did the flip-flop saying, oh, I can't support this. And look, I understand. I don't condone what happened on January 6th, but at the same time, the way that she kind of turned on Trump saying he is this, he is, you know, a fascist, he's all these things. I thought, you know what? Okay, at least she's trying to get it. Whoopi Goldberg doesn't get it. Sonny Houston doesn't get it. Anna Navarro, who used to be, according to her, she used to be a Republican, she doesn't get it. So they're still sitting there as they're sitting on these thrones in their minds, and they're still saying, oh, well, you know, the Hunter pardon, that doesn't make, who cares? You know, it's his son, it's politically motivated, it's this, it's that. You don't get to say that. You really don't. And, it, you know, to say that it was politically motivated by who? By Biden's DOJ? By Merrick Garland? It was politically motivated? No, he evaded taxes, and he had a felony gun charge. You can't lie on a gun application. There are people serving time in jail right now for lying on a gun application. This isn't a clerical error. This is the same thing with Marilyn Mosby. It's not a clerical error. You are a lawyer, for God's sakes. Okay? I'm going to ask Bobo the Clown to fill out a gun application and hope that he gets it right, even though it seems Bobo the Clown could possibly do it. Speaking of Marilyn Mosby, of course, you know, we're good friends. Yeah, right. Marilyn Mosby, look, I don't even blame her for shooting her shot right now. I don't blame her. Because if you're going to give a pardon to Hunter Biden, who obviously broke the law, and this is obviously not politically motivated, of course you're going to have somebody like Marilyn Mosby, who hates house arrest. She can't even stay on it. You're going to have her come out of the woodworks with her friend attorney Ben Crump, and they're going to beg for a pardon. Who knows? They might get it. Who knows? I want you to take a listen.
Following the news of President Biden's pardon of his son Hunter, there's a renewed push to pardon Marilyn Mosby. Fox 25's Mackenzie Frost is back live with us again to break down the latest twist in the Mosby legal story. Mackenzie.
Yeah, Mary, following the news of Hunter Biden's pardon, we got a statement today from civil rights attorney Ben Crump, who is again calling on President Joe Biden to pardon Marilyn Mosby. In this statement, let me read part of it to you. He says, quote, "We want to remind President Biden that justice is still not served for so many in this country. While Hunter Biden was selectively prosecuted, he's not the only one." Adding, "Marilyn Mosby is on house arrest right now with her law license hanging in the balance over purchasing property with her own money. We welcome a conversation with President Biden to discuss ways to use his pardon power to free those others who deserve justice also." Now, we know Ben Crump has been a supporter of Marilyn Mosby throughout her legal problems over the years. Crump was at Marilyn Mosby's sentencing earlier this year in May when she was sentenced for her federal convictions of perjury and mortgage fraud. And Marilyn Mosby's supporters launched an online petition back in March of this year before she was even sentenced, urging President Biden for a pardon.
All right, first and foremost, I would be embarrassed to say this publicly. I mean, the begging publicly from her, I feel as though it's exceeded the limit. Don't you feel that way? I would have sent a private email. You know what? I would have had Attorney Ben Crump probably call Kamala Harris, and then Kamala Harris asked for the favor. I don't think I would have made this public. Now, I know they want the public to help them pressure Joe Biden in the situation, but at this point, it's kind of embarrassing. And then they were talking about the fact that she's on house arrest. We've already noted that she's really not. She's... She gets in trouble all the time with her probation officer because she doesn't like to stay in the house while on house arrest. She has yet to hand over any paperwork, according to reports, that she actually has this job that she says she has in California. So I don't know. I'm not buying the fact that she's on house arrest. But another piece of this, they're saying that her law license is hanging in the balance. I would think that she would have been disbarred from the scandals in which she has been found guilty. How the heck does she still have a law license? How? That was a part of this, ladies and gentlemen, that actually shocked me. I was like, wait. You're telling me Marilyn Mosby could get off a house arrest and still practice law? That's scary. Right? Wow. Oh, man. Well, anyways, when we get back, I do want to talk about my friend Sher Michael Singleton, of course, Karine Jean-Pierre, and the hot water she's currently in. But this is very significant from Sher Michael because I think he nails the fact that, you know, for so long we've been hearing from the Democrats that Republicans are the deplorables, right? We are the threat to democracy. President Trump is definitely a threat to democracy. He's, you know, a dictator. He says he's going to do this on day one, and only a dictator would do that. And all of these things, right? They used to say he was not presidential, right? That was the whole thing. He wasn't presidential. He's got mean tweets and all these things. But when you're looking at the Democrat Party today, does it not feel like just pure projection, like at this point? Because what are you saying exactly? When we get back, we're going to take a listen to Sher Michael because I think you're going to want to hear this. All right, we're talking about Hunter Biden's pardon. I know. We talked about it yesterday, but I love the fact that so many people weighed in yesterday on the pardon, because, of course, it happened on a Sunday night. You don't usually see that, but I guess when you renege on what you say, right, when you tell everybody that you were absolutely sure that you are not going to put your thumb on the scales of justice, and that just because Hunter Biden is your son doesn't mean you're going to get involved. When you say all of these things for months, and then all of a sudden you are on your way out of the White House and you think, let me save my son. Well, I want you to hear my friend Sher Michael Singleton. Again, he was on CNN, and he's a Republican. He actually worked for Dr. Ben Carson when he was at HUD with President Trump. But at the same time, So Michael has had some criticism of President Trump and many in his administration previously, but I think he absolutely nails it here on what is going on when it comes to the Democrat Party. Take a listen.
Democrats portrayed the president as this great arbiter of morality and truth. They said that he somehow was a better standard bearer for protecting norms and the institutions of our country, and yet that wasn't true. They lied. You can go all the way back to 2022 when they were asked this question. And the White House continuously, consecutively lied over and over and over again. They could have simply said, to MJ's point, to Chuck's point, the president isn't going to put his thumb on the scales of justice. He's going to wait. He hasn't made a decision yet. Most people would have expected that. They would have respected that. I think most people, to your point, Chuck, believe if it was my child, I probably would have done the same thing. That's not the issue, Jake. The question here, the burden on the White House, I would argue, is the continuous lies. You said that you were better than this other guy. You criticized the other guy for all of these things, and now your DOJ is committing witch hunts, and this is now politicized. Well, you appointed Merrick Garland. You can't blame Republicans for that. And I can only imagine, as I've talked to a lot of Republicans, if this were Donald Trump, and I know people are going to give him a lot of criticism for the pardon he's already given, but if this were him and Don Jr. or Eric Trump or Ivanka, I can only imagine what the headlines would have been. And I will say, if you're Democrats and you're trying to walk this straight line that we're somehow better than Republicans because we care more about the future and state of this democracy, I think that's trash now. No one believes it. No one believes it. They've lost all credibility for the facade they portrayed for several years.
Again, that's Sir Michael Singleton, and he's a Republican saying this, but I want you to know there are Democrats saying the same thing. Charlemagne the God, right, who supported VP Harris, supported Biden. He always gets in line every election cycle, every single time. I don't expect him to get out of line even, you know, in 2028. I just don't see it, right? He loves getting in line. But yesterday he did comment on his show on The Breakfast Club and said, look, you know, let's be honest. President Biden did lie about whether or not he was going to pardon his son. He said that he believed when Joe Biden made the comment in his statement that what was happening with Hunter was infected with politics. You know, you had Charlemagne the God that pointed out and said, absolutely not. You can't evade taxes. And that felony gun charge is a legit felony gun charge. And so that was Charlemagne the God, a Democrat. You had other Democrats coming forward and saying, like Stephen A. Smith, you might have saw he was on with Chris Cuomo on News Nation. He also had, you know, he has like a podcast himself. And he said the same things. He said, look, you can't sit there and say that you're better than President Trump when you're doing worse. And so, honestly, when it comes to Marilyn Mosby and her request for the pardon, if you're looking at what Joe Biden pardoned his son for, she did a lot less. She did a lot less. We're talking about Burisma. We're talking about Ukraine. We're talking about some of his dealings with foreign, you know, nationals. Remember, he's now pardoned from 2014 to 2024. We have no idea what that encompasses, but we can take a wild guess, considering all the traveling and everything else he's been doing and those text messages we saw on his laptop. But if you're looking at Marilyn Mosby and what she's done, lying on the mortgage application, as we talked about earlier, she hasn't been disbarred. I mean, her pardon is much easier to do than Hunter's. We'll keep our eye on it and see what happens there. I also have Karine Jean-Pierre. Of course, she's really in hot water. And as Alyssa Farah said on The View, she's she feels bad for her, right? Because, you know, Karine Jean-Pierre, she's been lying about this for months. And now, of course, everybody wants her head on it. Take a listen to her response.
Justice Department is broken, Karine.
He believes in the Justice Department. He believes that
after
there was
saying all that. He believes in the Justice Department.
This is his words. He said this. This is the president saying
he
this.
He just said it's infected with politics.
I said I would not interfere with the Justice Department's decision making. I kept my word, even as I have watched my son being selectively an unfair prosecutor.
So how deep is the rot? How many selective prosecutions are there at the DOJ?
What I can speak to is this particular case, which is Hunter Biden, who has the last name of the president.
All right. That is Karine Jean-Pierre. And as you heard there, I don't know if anybody has had to deal with White House correspondents or if you have any friends that has been a White House correspondent. They are like sharks, okay? That specific job to be able to speak to the press secretary, to get your questions to whoever that press secretary is. I mean, you got to get the news out before any other press secretary, or I should say press reporter in that room. It is a tough job to be a White House correspondent. And trust me, they are not going to let go of this. They're going to be like dogs with a bone when it comes to KJP. So she's going to continue to answer some of these questions. I wanted to make sure we talked about that because, again, I thought the responses were interesting. If you want to weigh in, you can. It's 410-WCBM-680, 410-922-6680. You can send a text as well. Coming up next, we are going to shift over to Baltimore County. We got 12 names that have been presented that could become the next county executive. I want to ask you who you prefer. All right, we're talking about Hunter Biden's pardon. Not going to talk about it too much today. I know we spent a lot of time on it yesterday, but I thought that was interesting. Karine Jean-Pierre, she's having to explain a lot. And, you know, people were pointing out that she, you know, she's in hot water, but it's not necessarily her fault. And I have to agree with that. She's been put in a very tough position with this pardon. Now, do I feel bad for her? No. You know, I don't have a heart, exactly. But I do agree that she's in a tough position that she should not be in. I do want to talk about the 12 names that have been introduced that could possibly become the next Baltimore County executive. And when Glenn Gilhart gets to the studio here at 10 a.m., don't forget he'll join us live. We're going to talk about the 12 names with him as well. But I do want to just kind of put them out there so we can get this ball rolling. I mean, of course, there's been a lot of talk about, you know, which direction is Baltimore County going to go in general, right? Because let's face it, it's become Baltimore City 2.0. Let's face it. When you're looking at Towson Town Center, when you're looking at juveniles, the carjackings, we talked about the incident in Cockeysville where the kids were robbed at gunpoint by other juveniles that jumped out of a stolen car. To me, that was still the most crazy story of the summer. And I still can't believe that didn't make national headlines. Remember, you had a bunch of second and third graders that were robbed at gunpoint walking home from soccer practice. Second and third grade. What did you think you were going to get off of a second or third grader? Okay? I personally have a third grader. I can tell you, she does not have a phone, and she does not have money. If she ever had cash on her, she would be buying slime or ingredients to make more slime, okay? Which I know for a fact means Elmer's glue, baking soda, right? Glitter. Wait a minute, is she making slime? Now that I think about it, I gotta check my... No, I'm kidding. She's making slime, but honestly, think about this. A third grader, you robbed a third grader at gunpoint. They don't have anything, okay? They're third graders. Well, anyways, I did see Johnny Olszewski. He was on the couch this morning with Patrice on Fox 45. And she was asking him about the 12 names and asking him, you know, who he favors. And I couldn't help but note that he did, again, mention his friend DeAndre Andrews. Is that her last name? Make sure I have her last name correct. I know her name is DeAndre. She's the one. In case they don't find somebody by January 3rd, she can step up in that position. And a lot of people did not love the fact that she was put forth, I guess you could say, by some of those on county council and also county executive Olszewski, who put her in this place, because a lot of people were saying that she also had baggage. And that they believed that she wouldn't be somebody that they could trust in integrity-wise. Now, I don't know exactly what her backstory is. Obviously, there's a lot of talk on the streets, whether or not that can be confirmed or not. I don't know. But he did mention DeAndre this morning on the couch. And I kind of look at this and I say, all right, you've got some Republicans on county council. You got some city or some Democrats on county council. Obviously, the Democrats outweigh the Republicans. But at the same time, I would think that even county council members, looking at the way Baltimore County is going, I would think that they want someone much more conservative, someone that's going to jump into action when there are crimes, especially when it involves juveniles. I would think now that Anne Arundel County is looking at their bag ban again, and if you guys heard about this, but not sure if it's going to get passed or not, but in Anne Arundel County, the county council is considering, because they sponsored a bill, to do away with the bag tax. Of course, it was Republicans in Anne Arundel, but if you're looking at how people are unhappy with the bag ban here in Baltimore County, I would think that they would also consider it. Now, I know for a fact that we had Republicans, just like in Anne Arundel County, that liked the bag ban. I still can't get over that, to be honest with you. I can't get over that. And of course, and I don't know about how you feel about this, but it made me look at some of those Republicans a little differently, because the last thing you want, number one, is more government, right, if you're a Republican. And number two, why would you want to put a tax on anything, especially a bag? And there's a lot of people that have pointed out, with this bag tax, not only do you have, of course, you can bring your own reusable bag, but if you're like me, I forget it all the time. I even have them in the car, and I forget to bring them inside of Target. I forget. And then I'm one of those people, like, I don't want to buy a bag. Get out of my face with that. I don't want to buy a bag. And then at the same time, if you're going to some of these stores where you're doing your own checkout service, so it's like, you know, I basically work here, right? So I do my own checkout service. I am paying for my bag. I'm loading that bag in the car. And you know what I mean? It's just like, wait, I didn't realize I worked here at Wise. You know, I don't remember filling out an application. But that's where we are with things. And it's just, to me, it's wild to think that we're even paying more on top of that. Well, anyways, it'll be interesting to see if this incoming county executive, if any of these candidates of the 12 will talk about that bag ban. Because you know what I think? I think whoever speaks about it and says that they're going to do away with it, I think they're going to get a lot of support. I really do. Oh, there's two things we got to talk about to the 12 candidates. And don't take it from me, right? Because I have not won an election. So don't take it from me. But I would say, speaking to people as I do, I would say if you talk about the bag ban, and if you talk about doing something in regards to juvenile crime, if you say that you're going to stand up to Vincent Schiraldi and Governor Wes Moore, and you're going to tell them, look, we need to get somebody else to handle DJS because it's not working. If you do those things, you're in there like swimwear. I'm telling you right now, those are the three concerns. All anybody can tell you this. Now, people would say, well, Kim, those were your three concerns, and you didn't win the congressional seat. You're not wrong, okay? You're not wrong. At the same time, though, I think people look at the congressional seat a little differently than they look at the county executive seat. I could be wrong on that, but I think that they look at that differently. I think, in my mind, all politics is local. For some people, they don't see it that way. Some people look at the congressional seats, forget about the district office, and they just think about those congressional members just on Capitol Hill. Whereas I try to remind people, you know, that's another elected official that could be helping us locally. But here in the state of Maryland, you never see it happen. But if you go to other states, like in Massachusetts or what have you, you will see that those congressional members do spend a lot more time in their district offices. If you don't follow already, Anna Paulina Luna out of Tampa, Florida, she spends half her time on Capitol Hill and half her time at the district office. And she's there all of the time. Whenever she's out on the Hill, she's at her district office. She's meeting with people in her district. That's how it's supposed to be. That's the way it was designed. Here in the state of Maryland, because we have this one-party mob rule, and they know they don't have to work for your votes, well, not maybe yours, but, you know, those that will blindly vote for them. They have now lowered the bar so much so, where, as I told you before, I asked people, do you know where Dutch Ruppersberger's office is? Do you know where his district office is? And they'll say, no, I didn't know he had one. That's sad. That's sad. It should be something that you know. I asked people, do you know where Congressman Kwai Siafube's office is? They don't know. They have no idea. And nor are they there. So don't worry about even going over there. They're not they're not there. But see, that's the difference here in the state of Maryland. That's why I say, you know, stop allowing these elected officials to take your vote for granted. Because you're not doing anything with it. Well, anyways, of course, the 12 names. As I mentioned on Morning Drive, I do recognize some of these names. And I know I'm probably most likely going to mess up at least four of these. Okay? So just understand that I am not great with names, and I will try my best. You've got Tara Ebersole. Now, I know I got that one right. Tara Ebersole is on the list. Jim Brochet. Now, I saw Jim Brochet's name, and I thought, all right, okay. Looks like, yeah, I think Jim's going to have, you know, I think he's going to be one of the front runners. If you ever talk about the fact that Johnny Osheski beat Jim way back when. And some people will say, man, I do regret not making sure that I voted for Jim or not helping him out. There's also, you know, the fact that Johnny Osheski nearly lost to him.
the margin there was so small. He has a lot of fans in Baltimore County, Jim Brochin. Barry F. Williams. Now, I will say I do not know who that is. But again, we're going to have Glenn Gilhar in here. He knows a lot of these people on this list. So we'll go over it with Glenn. You've got Yara Check. I that could be totally wrong. Yara, I apologize from the bottom of my heart. And I'm not trying to, you know, it's kind of like the Kamala Harris thing. And I'm not trying to not pronounce it correctly. I don't know what this says. Yara Check, I guess, is where we're going to go with this. C-H-E-I-K-H. Okay? And I'm usually not that bad at names, just because my last name is Klasik. Okay? So if I see something that's, you know, Slavic, right? Usually I can figure it out. I don't know this name here. You've got John S. Carden. All right. John S. Carden's on the list. William Hun is on the list. Paul Drutz Hannas, if you know who Paul is, he's on the list. Tom Quirk is on the list. Catherine Clausmeyer, somebody that I think many people are very familiar with as well. Gregory Dennis. And then there's Eris, oh gosh, Meseleratos. Yes, I'm going to go with that. Meseleratos. I'm going to go with that one. Okay, and then you've got George Perdakakis Senior. I'm awful at this. I really am. I should have taken this off the show plan. I'm really bad at this. But some of these names I do recognize, and I think that this is going to be, you know, I'm not going to say that there's going to be a lot of, I'm going to say there's going to be a lot of public input. And, of course, this thing is going to be appointed, right? And I'm guessing that Baltimore County Council, they're going to, you know, talk to their constituents and try to figure out exactly where they stand and who they would want the front runners to be. I would assume, because this all has to happen before January 3rd, I would assume that they're going to probably most likely narrow this list down to about a top four. And I would assume they would then go from there in getting more of the public input. They're going to have a tough job in front of them. I don't envy Baltimore County Council for having to make this decision. There's going to be a lot of people that aren't going to like the decision that's made. I will say this, out of all of these names, at least from the ones that I know who are, you know, in my view, probably most popular, they're not as progressive as Johnny O. And I hate using that word progressive because it's not that he's progressive. He just doesn't listen to anybody else and he thinks he knows better. He puts things like climate change above, you know, the economy, which is absolutely ridiculous. But at least the front runners here, like I mentioned, Jim Brochin, you're not going to get that from a Jim County executive. You're not going to get that. I would also assume that many of these people are fed up with the juvenile crime as much as we are. And I would assume that a lot of these individuals remember when Towson was an upscale neighborhood. Okay? I think I mentioned I attended a real estate symposium. And I was really there just to listen. And this was during the race. And I wanted to hear more about what was going on in Hunt Valley. And that's what it was about. It's about businesses in Hunt Valley, new businesses that will be coming to the Hunt Valley area, things like that. Because I could see the writing on the wall in Towson, and I could also see that Hunt Valley, retail-wise, was still doing fairly well. So I wanted to understand, like, what is Hunt Valley doing a little differently than Towson? And, of course, it all came back and down to the crime and violence. And these were real estate developers. These were those that were investing in the Hunt Valley area. These were people that were actually leaving the Towson area, taking their commercial businesses, and wanting to figure out how they can implement them in Hunt Valley. They are done with Towson. Now, another thing that came up during the symposium was the armed robberies that were happening there at Hunt Valley, especially along the light rail. And so people were wondering, you know, if they're thinking about the red line, if they're thinking about other, you know, public transportation, you know, how is that going to affect the businesses in Hunt Valley? There are people very concerned with that. And so if you get a county executive that understands the concerns, right, of the business owners in Hunt Valley and in Towson, I think you could see some major changes. What's happening at Towson Town Center is unacceptable. The fact that the county executive has allowed it to continue like this since he's been in office is just ridiculous. And I honestly, I was shocked to see how many votes Johnny O received, knowing that we've just had the shooting in Rogers Forge, knowing that somebody was recently stabbed in the Towson Town Center parking lot, you know, knowing the sexual assault cases that are now being investigated around the Towson University area. I was shocked that you still had people. I know they do, you know, vote blue no matter who, but I was shocked to see that they were still voting for him. This is a nightmare. It's a disaster. And when you're talking about the fact, even, you know, because at that time, say you're voting in Baltimore County and you know on the Baltimore City ballot, the police department could possibly go over to Mayor Brandon Scott. I would think Baltimore County residents like myself, we're looking at that like, oh, no. Now we're going to have less support in the city. A lot of the crime that's being committed in the county are from people that live in the city. We've talked about this. They want to deny it. But if you look at the arrests that have been made in Baltimore County, you can see a lot of those that are involved in the carjackings, the robberies, and the shootings are Baltimore City residents. So if they're having a decrease in patrol officers, if they're doing a decrease in their budget as a Baltimore County resident, that scares me. When we talk about the open-air drug markets, we've heard from the police department that a lot of those people are from Baltimore City. It's tough. It's tough. All right, I want you to weigh in on this. 410-WCBM-680, 410-922-6680. Out of the 12 names, and you can see this list on Fox 45, I think the Baltimore Brew has it, Baltimore Sun has it. Take a look, at the 12 names, and let me know if you recognize any of those, and if you are interested in any of those individuals becoming the next county executive. Because this decision is going to be made very quickly. I mean, look, Christmas will be here before you know it, and after Christmas, you will have a new county executive right after the new year. So call in and let me know. We'll discuss. All right, we're talking about Baltimore County Executive. No, not Johnny O. He's on his way out. He's going to Congress. But we still got to fill his seat. There are 12 names that have been thrown into the hat. Actually, it's a lot more than I thought was going to be in the running. I really did. I thought we would get maybe 6 or 7 names. I wasn't expecting 12. I got Jet in Moncton. Jet, you wanted to weigh in?
I would. Thanks for taking my call, Kim. And as previously stated when I've called you before, I'm a former Baltimore County employee, retired firefighter with over 30 years. So I do know a little bit about the dynamics of the county council and how they work. So I'm just going to make it short. There are going to be 3 words that are going to be paramount as to who they pick for the next county executive: diversity, equity, inclusion. Anybody that's in the running that wants to deviate from any of that, those things will be pushed away to the side. And that's just the bottom line. That's how Baltimore County operates. Whether you like it or whether you not, that's just that, and that's just my opinion. Thank you.
Thank you, Jed. I appreciate you. Thank you so much for your service. Look, I hope Jet's wrong. Not saying that he is wrong. I hope that he's wrong. I mean, I would hope that Democrats look at the 2024 cycle, look at the fact that President Trump won all 7 swing states. Yes, Maryland continued to go blue because Maryland is Maryland. But I would hope that they would know by now that for the most part, especially President Trump winning the popular vote, that nobody's really looking at DEI anymore. I mean, you had Walmart, Tractor Supply. Again, Tractor Supply, why did you have DEI? Could you call me and let me know? I didn't understand. Tractor Supply, Lowe's, you had all these companies that were doing DEI, and they've all said now, they've come forward since President Trump was reelected, that they're no longer doing DEI, that they're getting off of the bandwagon. Jet, I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm saying I'm hoping you're wrong. I hope you're wrong. I can't take any more of this DEI nonsense. I really can't. And what's really, it grates my nerves. You call somebody a DEI official or a DEI candidate, they get mad about it. You're the ones that introduced it. I didn't make up DEI. You wanted to be diversity, equity, inclusion, you know, czar. Not me. Don't introduce things if you don't like it. All right? Anyways, we're going to continue this conversation with Glenn Gilhar. He's coming up here next. He knows a lot about Baltimore County. Of course, he's running in 2026, and that's important because he's been knocking doors for quite some time. And as a Republican, I think that's what you have to do. So I'm inspired by how hard he's working. Glenn Gilhar coming up next.
Kim Plasic Live starts now on Talk Radio 680. WCBM and 99.9 FM in Harford County.
All right, good morning. Happy Tuesday. If you're just joining us, we've got a treat for you. I've got an in-studio guest that has been working very hard within the Maryland GOP, but even more importantly, he has been working very hard in his district. Of course, we're going to have another election coming up in 2026, and it's important because, of course, these are state and delegate seats that are up for grabs, and what happens in Annapolis, as you've probably noticed, really affect us directly in so many different ways, and I have to say, we got to get more Republicans in Annapolis. Right now, we are the minority, but hopefully we can change all that, especially with my guest, Glenn Gilhar. Good morning, Glenn.
Good morning, Kim. Thank you for having me.
No, of course. So you're like a wealth of knowledge when it comes to local politics. Just so people know, you volunteered on my campaign, and you were one of my super volunteers. You were there for every door knocking, the sign waving, the phone banking. I think you probably flipped more people on the phone than I did. I will say that, because you are really good at talking to people and breaking down the issues in a way where people want to continue to listen, right? That's the key, right? You can't scare them off. You can't be like, well, you know, this is crazy. This is ridiculous. You're not like that. You say, hey, here's what we can do differently. And that's what I love about you. Glenn, real quick, if you could tell them where you're running and why this is so important to you.
Well, thank you, Kim. And first off, I did want to say you inspire me. I think the people are looking for genuine people to run for office, for elected leaders who are sincere. We saw this on the national race with Kamala Harris, where she said, 10 years, she's like, I want to stop fracking. I want to stop fracking. I want to ban fracking. And then she says, I want fracking.
Yeah.
Of course, nobody believed her, right?
Yeah.
So there's so many of these politicians who'll just say anything just to get elected.
Right.
So I love your genuineness about you. But I'm in District 8. That's where I live, which is so your listeners know the area we're talking about. We're talking about Providence Road, which is like the East Towson area, all the way through to Martin Boulevard and Middle River, mostly south of Joppa Road. Rosedale is split between District 6, which is like Delegate Grammer and Metzger and
yep.
Bob Long. I'll leave somebody out. I'm sorry. And so we're surrounded by Republicans, so to speak. 77A, we have Delegate Chalega, Naraki. And then over in 42, we have Chris West, who's our state senator, Nino Mangione.
Yeah.
So he also talked about getting early start. So back when President Trump said he was going to announce to be president, right after the last Senate race was called in 2022, he said, I want to be your president. So as Republicans, we cannot wait. Also in Maryland, we made some huge gains thanks to people like you and your hard work that you put
thanks,
in. Yes, you did. I mean, President Trump gained 10 points in Maryland. And you had received, I think, the most number of votes in of any Republican since like the 1980s in District 2. So what an accomplishment, Kim. You did a fantastic job.
Thank you. I mean, look, I wish we would have won, right? I wish this
yes.
was a different conversation. But that's why I think that your seat is so important. That's why I think that you can, in fact, win this. Just let people know how long you've been door knocking, because you door knock religiously.
Absolutely. Well, I ran in 2022, the District 8 seats since 1990 through 2022 have had at least one Republican delegate, starting with Al Redmer and Jim Ports.
Okay.
All the way up through 2022 was Delegate Joe Boatler. So it is a very winnable district. It's kind of a purple district. 2022 is the first time since 1986 or so that the Democrats have actually swept. And if you look at my opponent's voting records, CPAC puts a nice rating on the state delegates, all the elected officials. When Delegate Joe Boatler was there, Delegate Bondari, Delegate Jackson, they had around a 10% voting record for conservative issues.
Okay.
Now they have a big fat zero.
Okay.
So they are, you know, activists, and they don't represent us, that's for sure.
Yeah, and who's in that seat currently?
So it's a three-member district.
Okay.
Right now, the three representatives are Delegate Carl Jackson, Delegate Harry Bondari, Delegate Nick Allen, and then State Senator is Kathy Klausmeier, which is one of the names that you brought up on the list.
For county executive.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't realize that was split that way, because I met All three of those delegates, when we were at early voting, you were there with me, Glenn, when
yes.
we were at Honeygo.
Yes.
I didn't realize they were all sharing that area.
Yes, and Delegate Nick Allen was, he was actually at Martin Boulevard when I was there on Election Day campaigning for you.
Okay. All right. Nice. Well, Glenn, I know for a fact that you have an event coming up this weekend. Like I told people, you're already out there hitting the ground running.
Absolutely.
If you could tell about the event this weekend, because I'll be there.
Absolutely. I'm very honored to have a fantastic featured guest speaker, Kimberly Klasick. Yeah, so it's going to be at the Bowman Restaurant in Hartford Road in beautiful Parkville in the heart of District 8. It's going to have great food, great conversation. It's a Christmas party. This is Christmas time of year. I call it the Keep Christ in Christmas fundraiser because I think we need to keep focus on our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ and God during these times. If people want to come to the event, I ask you to go to my website, friendsofglenngilhar.org. Just click events. There's a link there. Also, on my Facebook page, I'm a One End Glenn. If you put in Friends of Glenn, I usually come right up on Facebook. You'll see the link. And Kim, if you'd be kind enough to share it, I appreciate
I'll
it.
I'll share it again. Yes,
absolutely.
Of course.
Thank you so much. Appreciate your support.
No, of course. I think you can win this seat. Yeah,
and you live in District 8.
I do.
And
yes.
I want you to be my congresswoman, and I want to be your state delegate. And I feel bad not only for you on the results of this last election, but for the people of Baltimore County, because I go back to Helen Delich Bentley, who represented the District 2 congressional seat, and what she did, she worked with President Reagan. She brought a lot of jobs down to the port. So the reason we've got one of the nationally recognized port right here, a lot of it goes back to Helen Bentley.
Yep.
And you would have been that kind of congresswoman. What a missed opportunity. President Trump says he wants to bring all these, he wants a missile defense system for the United States. What better place to build that would be at Martin's or the Martin's property down there in Middle River? Will yep. Johnny O be beating that drum? I hope so, but I know yeah. Kimberly Klasick sure would have been bringing those jobs, working with President Trump, not obstructing him, my goodness, you would have been a fantastic congresswoman. By the way, a lot of people love you in District 8, maybe State Senator Kim Klasick, Delegate Kim Klasick.
Oh my goodness,
we absolutely love you. I'd love
Thank
to have you.
You
at Annapolis. Whatever you decide to do in the future, Kim, I am with you 100%.
Thank you, Glenn. I appreciate it. And I know you are. I know that you are. And yes, I do hope that Johnny Ushesky does not obstruct President Trump at every turn, and I do hope that he brings more careers and jobs to the district, because like you said, there's a lot of opportunity, even in Carroll County. There's so much opportunity to really drive the economy.
Well, we talked about the closed Black & Decker plant up there in Carroll County.
Yep.
So Johnny O, if you're listening, jobs. Work with President Trump. Bring them to Baltimore County, please.
Yes, we're hoping that happens. Also, we were talking about the county executive seat here, and Marty in the text line pointed out that Jim Brochin lost by 17 votes when he was running against Johnny Ushesky in their primary. I got to ask you, Glenn, because you know about a lot of these processes. You know, when it comes to replacing Johnny O in this executive seat, do we usually do it this way? Do we usually go through a list of names, take names out of the hat, and then is this what we usually do? Because I don't recall this.
No, this is absolutely bizarre that we even have these 12 names, in my opinion. Because if we go back to when the very sad passing of County Executive Kevin Kamenetz. At that time, the county administrator, who was Fred Holman, there was really no discussion about, let's get a list of names. Fred Holman, he was the administrator. He was approved by the county council, and he became the county executive, for the remainder of the term. Right now, the county administrator is DeAndrea Walker.
The last name I was looking for, DeAndrea Walker.
DeAndrea Walker. So, DeAndrea, I do not know why they're going through this process. You are the county administrator. You should be the temporary county executive if they follow precedent of way it was done in the past. But anyway, the county council, for whatever reasons, decided to go through this open process. I was surprised to see Jim Brochin's name on that list because a lot of people saw him as a candidate possibly for the next round, you know, because it's going to be an open seat because of term limits. So a lot of people thought Jim Brochin would be the candidate in 2026. Again, he only lost by 17 votes. So to have him on this list, you know, he takes his name off on 26 because the deal is whoever picks this job is not supposed to, I think by the county charter, not supposed to be a candidate in 2026. So why would his name even be on here if he has any future ambitions of being the county executive long term?
Well, then I have even more questions, because then why would Catherine Klausmeier be on there if that's also the case?
Well, that's very interesting that you bring up Kathy Klausmeier, because she is my state delegate in District 8. She's a sitting sitting state senator. She's been in there since about 1992. There's a lot of speculation that she's going to retire from you know, from the state senate. So that's probably why her name's in there. But if they were to pick her or were to select Kathy Klausmeier, it has a direct impact on my race, because what will happen is her seat would be vacant. The Democrat Central Committee, they will select a name to give to Governor Moore to appoint as her replacement, more than likely one of the sitting delegates. And then the Democrat Central Committee will pick, you know, one of their people on their bench to be the delegate. So, you know, to me, it's unfair. You know, Kathy Klausmeier, you know, she made a commitment to the residents, to the voters in District 8. I'm a voter in District 8. She made a commitment to me to be our state senator for the four-year term, and for her to jump out and then to appoint all these different moving parts here, it makes it very unfair in 2026. And I'll give you an example. It's in 2018, Delegate Eric Bromwell, who is a long-term delegate, he was selected by Johnny Osheski to be on his staff. And then that opened that seat up, and they selected Carl Jackson from the bench to be delegate. So he was appointed 3 years early. So he had the 3 years term. So he kind of ran as an incumbent instead of running as a true open seat. So I mean, we love you, Kathy Klausmeier, but I'm hoping that you're not selected. I hope that you know, continue your commitment to the voters in District 8 and serve out your term.
Yeah. Wow. This is why I love having you here, Glenn. In case you're just joining us, this is Glenn Gilhar that I'm speaking to. He is running in District 8 in 2026, but we are going to get into, we're going to jump into some of these things that we can expect in Annapolis when we come back from break. Real quick, if you want to weigh in or you have a question for Glenn, you can call 410-WCBM-680, 410-922-6680. You can also text me through the text line, and I can read it here on air. I will say real quick, I got a text here, Glenn. It says, this is from someone that says, I was redistricted out of District 8. They also say the Dems in District 8 won because of the new district lines. Do you feel that way as well?
I want to say yes and no. And the reason I say that is they redistricted Delegate Joe Boatler out of District 8. So as a, and you know this yourself, as a first-time candidate, you're starting from scratch, building up name recognition, resources to run a campaign organization. So they took out part of Perry Hall and Kearney and gave us Middle River. So the people in Middle River didn't know Glenn Gilhar. They know who I am now, especially thanks to you, a Middle River resident. So, I think it's a very winnable district, especially, again, if you look that we have Republicans representing Towson with Nino and Chris West. We're surrounded. We've got all around us. And it's a working-class district, a lot of blue-collar workers. These are Democrat Trump voters, I think. I think we're going to do very well and surprise a lot of people, but we cannot sit on our hands. And also for the Republicans who did not vote, the 30% or so who didn't vote, I understand you're busy, you're working, but I ask you to please go to the Maryland Board of Elections website, click that mail-in ballot. I don't like mail-in voting any more than you do, but please do it. Too big to rig. Fill out the mail-in applications, send them in. We're losing the mail-in ballots by a 2-to-1 margin. We need to even that up.
Yeah, I would have loved to have that 30% here. In November. But, you know, let bygones be bygones. Coming up next, we'll have Glenn Gilhar join us some more. We're going to talk about what to expect in this next session coming up in Annapolis. All right. Good morning. I wasn't sure if you were just listening, but if you're impressed, trust me, I'm impressed, too. I got Glenn Gilhar in studio. He'll be running in District 8 in 2026, but he's already been knocking doors, talking to so many different people. Glenn did run back in 2022, and he has not given up. And I really admire that about you, Glenn. And if you were listening as well, don't forget, any show that you miss, it'll be archived on WCBM.com. But we were talking about Baltimore County. We're talking about the district. And as you can hear, Glenn Gilhar is a wealth of knowledge when it comes to what goes on in Baltimore County. Glenn, we had a caller just call in and ask Brian, the producer. Number one, please spell your name out. Give your website again, because you got this great fundraiser coming up this weekend. And then also, let us know again exactly where your district reaches.
All right. So my organization is Friends of Glenn Gilhar. And so you have a friend in Glenn. I'm a one in Glenn. And it's G-L-E-N. Gilhar is G-E-E-L-H-A-A-R, so it's two E's, two A's. So it's very easy. Friendsofglenngilhar.org is my website. And my district, because they were asking me more about the district, first off, I wanted to say, even if you do not live in District 8, the legislation that gets passed at Annapolis affects everybody.
Yeah.
What my delegates have put in down here in Annapolis affects Western Maryland, affects Carroll County. So whether you're in my district or not, come to my fundraiser at the Bowman on Saturday with Kim Klasick. I'd love to see you.
Yep. And then what time is that fundraiser, too?
Again, it's 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Bowman Restaurant. We're going to – it's a Christmas party. We've got the Christmas tree up. We've got the lights up. We're going to have Chris McComo live. He performs a lot of local clubs. He's going to be playing Christmas music on the keyboards for us. It's going to be a great family event. So please come out.
Nice. It's going to be great. And yes, I will be there. And so will Olivia.
She's bringing
her rubber band box so she can make everybody Christmas bracelets. So please, come on. They are free.
Maybe she'll bring my Vote for Glenn reusable bag.
Yes, she loves the bags. So we have a million bags at our house, and I always forget to take them with me to Target and all those other places. Real quick, Glenn, because again, you're a wealth of knowledge. Not all the time that I get somebody like you in studio. The MGA, yes. Tell us a little bit about that.
All right, so the legislative session's coming up. I'm asking for your listeners to be very vigilant when the session starts. As it's been well documented in the news, there's a structural deficit, mostly thanks to Kerwin. The budget started out in about 2022, if you go back there, around $22 billion. And then after the Thornton education and now the Kerwin education, right now we're at about $64 billion. So the budget of the state of Maryland, so we don't have a revenue problem, we have a spending problem.
Yeah.
And it has tripled since 2002. The budget has tripled, and now with the Kerwin, they want another $40 billion in 10 years. So it's going to take it to $100 billion. And they really need to, I think they need to restructure this Kerwin Commission guideline. So the bill's coming up this session. I wanted to go over the calendar real quick, if I may.
Yep.
All right. So the Maryland General Assembly starts convenes, I guess is the word to use, on June 8th. So that's when all the legislators go down there in Annapolis, runs 90 days. It's a 90-day session. So it's got a hard end and sine die adjournment on April the 7th. Important dates to recognize, that first January month, very important. That's when your delegates, if there's legislation you want introduced, reach out to them now. They can pre-file bills. And then right around February 3rd, 6th, it's not that they can't introduce bills, but then they go right, they have to go to like a special committee to even get anybody to look at them. Crossover day, March 17th. And then a lot of people keep asking me, say, well, Glenn, you know, I'm busy. How do I get down to Annapolis to testify? What is the process? So let me just give it to you real quick. Maryland's got a really great website. It's mgaleg.maryland.gov. You click on My MGA. You set up an account. You can, you'll see all the bills listed there after the session starts. You can file written testimony. You can file, like, on a Zoom call, testify on a Zoom call, or you can testify in person. Also, on that red, right there where the MGA is, there's two searches. There's the search at the top, but there's one at the bottom. Click that red search, and you can look at all these past bills that we're going to be talking about. And hopefully in the next segment.
No, absolutely. That's what we're going to do. Glenn, thank you so much for that. Because a lot of people do wonder, you know, how do they get their bills or their interests in front of our state senators or our delegates?
And they do listen to your voice. Look at that Maryland Piedmont Reliability Project. Wes Moore is finally talking about it because your voice is being heard.
Absolutely. We'll be right back with Glenn Gilhar. All right, good morning. We have a guest in studio learning a lot this morning. If you're just joining us, we've got Glenn Gilhar, really a wealth of knowledge, letting us know exactly what's going on here in Baltimore County. He's running in District 8 here in 2026. Of course, he needs your vote, but he's already been knocking doors, making phone calls, and he's not going to let up. Ran back in 2022, wasn't quite successful then, but never gave up. We do want to talk about a couple of different things here. Before I get into some more of, you know, whether it's the text or the phone calls, Glenn, what will make you different from what we already have here in District 8, you know, your opponent?
Well, thank you so much for asking me that question, Kim. And that's what a lot of people even say, you know, what's the differences between the Democrats or the Republicans? And I'm saying it's really night and day. My opponents, especially since they swept in 2022, I describe them as activists and not representatives. So let's, if I may, let me just go through a few quick points. Legislation for housing. First off, my opponents are big proponents of the HOME Act. So what is the HOME Act? So this is passed law legislation now that says that if you want to rent your house out, Kim, you have to accept a Section 8 voucher. Well, maybe a legal professional like a Dan Cox, he knows constitutional law, could call in and say, you know, why hasn't this been challenged, that you had to be forced to accept and participate in a public program?
Right.
So that HOME Act essentially turned every rental property all across the state of Maryland into a Section 8 property.
Yeah.
Also, you know, as you know, Johnny Osheski, his focus has been, he set up this housing fund in Baltimore County where they purchased the White Spring Apartments, gave that money to a private developer, your tax dollars to a private developer to buy an apartment complex for 20% of income. It's bringing a lot of crime and it's destabilizing our neighborhoods. Home ownership creates generational wealth. I want to talk about health real quick. And during the session in 2023, Delegate Nick Allen, he sponsored a bill, HB 0283, the Maryland Medical Assistance Program, gender-affirming treatment. Now, let me preface this by saying I have lots of friends, family members who are part of the LGBT community. So I love everybody. Love thy neighbor. That's my rule. But just talking about this policy in this particular bill, it relies on 64.5% of these gender treatments to be covered by the federal government. So when President Trump comes in and that funding dries up, who's going to pay for it? You're going to pay for it with higher taxes. I'm also very concerned that this bill, which is now law, does not have any, does not address ages. So, you know, we see this a lot from my opponents. They'll say, oh, you can't hold a 25-year-old, responsible who's held up a store and killed three people because his brain's not fully developed. But yet they expect 8-year-olds to be able to make life-altering decisions that's going to affect their ability to have biological children.
Yeah.
That's very, very serious. Abortion Care Access Act. My opponents voted for that. They even overrode Governor Hogan's veto. And what this does, you always hear I'm going to call them the pro-abortion lobby. They always say that the conversation should be between a woman and her doctor. Well, here they took the doctor out of it. $3.5 million minimum mandated spending to train people who are not doctors to perform abortion. So if you go to have an abortion in Maryland, chances are you're not going to have a conversation with a doctor. You're going to have a conversation with somebody who the state paid with your tax dollars to train. And also, they don't provide, they voted on public safety real quick to take away the law enforcement officer's Bill of Rights,
yeah,
to shield them from personal prosecution. But these health providers that they're training to perform abortions, if they make a mistake and you can't have children no more, guess what? You can't sue them because they have protections. Again, my opponents came out of the Health and Government Operations Committee. Delegate Bondary, he sits on that committee. So both of these health issues came that we just talked about came right out of that Harry Bondary committee. So we talked about public safety. Also, Climate Solutions Act. I think you should be able to drive whatever kind of car you want. You want an electric car, EV, that's fine, but you should be able to have a gas-powered car. They have mandates on the local government for electric school buses. So we had a cold morning this morning, right? So when we get these really cold mornings in February, like 8 degrees,
yeah.
Those EV school buses, chances are, from what we saw in, like, Chicago, they're not going to work. You're going to have to take off work because you're going to have to watch your kid because they can't get them to school. Or they're going to put them on virtual learning. There's a fracking ban in Western Maryland that they were for. I want that repealed. I want those energy jobs that President Trump was talking about coming to Western Maryland. Let's maybe make Western Maryland thrive.
Yeah.
So that's just a few. Perhaps your callers have some questions, too.
Absolutely. And as I said before, Glenn, you got my vote.
All right.
These are all the things that I love to hear. I've got Tom and Park. Bill. Tom, did you want to ask a question? Hello, Tom.
Oh, I got a couple things. I wish I knew Glenn was going to go there. But quite honestly, what Trump plans to do, and I'll say it briefly, might actually override some of those things, like the LOEPR. Oh, yeah. He wants to protect the police, and he wants to ban, you know, transgender, you know, affirming care, or whatever you want to call it. So that's that. But I called for another reason. There was two things, and you had talked about it earlier, but I know it's part of the platform that Glenn's on. And I'm glad you have them on. And that was the bag ban. Well, here's there's 30 little secrets about the bag ban. I don't know if you go to the store, but it was supposed to be a nickel a bag. But when I go to the bank, it's 10 cents, it's 15 cents, it's 11 cents. So that's a boondoggle. But here's the dirty little secret. It wasn't Johnny O that did it. It was a Republican councilman, David Marks, that actually introduced the bill as the first legislation in the council in, I think it was 2023. He introduced it.
He did introduce it.
Club for their endorsement.
He did introduce it, but I will say, Tom, that Johnny Olszewski had the opportunity to veto it,
yes,
or to not sign it because he knew that many of us were struggling financially, but he still signed it through. But you're right. It was introduced by a Republican, which we talked about.
I don't agree at all.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right. And so when Glenn makes the thing that there's a big difference between R's and D's, well, it was something like that. Johnny O goes out there, well, I work across the aisle. Well, of course they do when they vote like he does. I mean, come on. Now, the bag game may actually become statewide. That's the danger, and that might happen.
Yeah,
but
that's,
number
yeah.
Number two was developed under the juvenile justice. Now, I worked down in Annapolis for a couple of years, and in one of the years I was down there just after COVID, they usually have an equity, a financial impact statement that tells you how much the state's going to have to pay and all this other stuff. But now they've added the equity impact. The juvenile justice law is to protect one group of kids.
Right.
That's what it's for. That's why you see all this juvenile crime that's happening because they can't be questioned. They can't be taken. And to link that to the catalytic converter bill that passed last year, that was Carl Jackson's baby. The Bonner County police chief called him and told him, put something like this in and I'll support you. And it did. And it passed. And all it did was provide a reporting requirement. Somebody steals these things. But guess who's stealing them? Young teens.
Yeah.
They're the ones stealing it. So they really can't do anything with it. And there's no way to track if the theft, because according to Carl Jackson, the theft was supposed to stop the theft. This bill was supposed to stop the theft. It did not. It has not. And I'm still looking to try to get that info, but the police are pretty hush about releasing it.
Wow.
So this is an issue that has to be done, and they know it has to be done. And I suspect that they want to do as little as possible to keep those crime rates up but not report them, so that it makes it look like the crime is going down when it's actually not.
Right, right. Absolutely. Tom, thank you so much for calling in. I appreciate you. And if you can, come out to the fundraiser that Glenn has this weekend at Bowman. Thank you. Do you want to weigh in a little bit on that, Glenn?
Sure. So thank you, Tom, for calling in. Thank you I hear his passion about public safety and crime. Real quick, so Delegate Carl Jackson, again, talk about the difference between me and him when you go to vote, is he's one of these reimagine, and we see this a lot from the progressives, one of these reimagine, defund, dismantle the police. He mentioned this catalytic converter bill that he had, and it was signed into law, says it's going to stop crime. But guess what? I have this philosophy, maybe it's from watching old TV shows in the 70s, but if don't do the crime if you can't do the time.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
We have to start holding criminals accountable. accountable. And I'm sorry, you know, having a junkyard keep a paper record on who's put, you know, bringing in the junk, I don't think is going to stop people from sawing off your converter. Just going to take it to another state, let's say, you know, there's a big black market for these things.
Right.
The other thing that happened this past election was that question one, you know, had passed. And that's really tied the hands on, you know, as far as, you know, pro-life candidates like myself. But there's ways that, you know, there's the carrot approach and there's the stick approach. They took the stick away from us, but just still like the carrot. So one of the things that I hope to do when I'm elected is I'd like to have a heartbeat bill where if you go to your doctor and you to get a sonogram, and they say this is like 75% of women who see the sonogram keep their baby. But once you have documentation of that fetal heartbeat, you get that tax deduction. You won't have to wait till the baby's born. I'd like to make it easier for people to get sonograms. I want the moms to see the sonograms. So right. I think we could help some, you know, get sonograms at some of these doctor office sonogram machines. And I'd also like to see adoption assistance, you know, right now to help people adopt children who are needing homes. And the other thing that my opponents have been real big on is they seem to prioritize illegal immigrants. Now, I grew up in Parkville. It's a community with lots of immigrants, legal immigrants. And, you know, we'd be lost without them. They open businesses. They're fantastic.
Yeah.
But when they shield, like, they passed a bill, I believe, last year, the year before, where we can't share, like, driver's license information with the feds. You know, this is – so if you commit a crime, it's like rather than charge you that crime, they just release you back on the street. And you're those criminals are impacting and committing crimes not only against the citizens, but also the citizens, the immigrants who you know, follow the process. So
right.
We want criminals off our street, and my opponents are all about protecting criminals, and we need to change that. Also, Delegate Jackson is real big on these recreation centers. We're missing an opportunity. Let's get some tutors in there. If you want to play the one that they just opened, Johnny O was out there. We have video games for the kids to come in here and play. That's going to reduce crime because they can come in here and play video games instead of stealing your car. Well, I'm sorry. If you want to play video games, you need to show us your report card, make sure you're going to school, make sure you got your homework done. So thank you so much.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I hope people are paying attention because this is really, really important.
Yeah.
You know, our future relies on this. I got another caller here for us here, Glenn. Jay at Timonium. Jay, did you want to weigh in?
Yeah, hi, Kim. Thanks for taking my call. And just want to say, from what it sounds like, the future delegate is doing the right thing because being engaged after elections is something Republicans really are not very good at. And we hear them during the election cycle, but afterwards we kind of don't hear from them. And
yeah.
Stay engaged in your community is commendable. So I just want to say that.
Thank you, Jay.
But kind of the point, and a caller before me, I forget his name, he kind of stole my thunder. Much like a lot of the bad legislation that goes nationwide comes out of California, a lot of the bad legislation in Maryland comes out of Montgomery County, the liberal hotbed of the state. And unfortunately, it spread to Baltimore County with the bag fee and tax. Years ago, there was a saying, I believe it was during Ehrlich, that a fee is a tax. And I believe it was like the sewer bill issue he passed, something or something unpopular. And the same way with the rain tax. So we kind of, you know, got away from those, but now we're stuck with this bag thing. And I'm wondering if the future delegate has any insight as to how that bill actually made it through.
Yeah, no, that's a great question, Jay. Thank you so much for calling in. If you could continue to listen on the other side of that. Glenn Gilhar, you got an answer for us here?
Yeah, sure. Well, I can see the residents in Baltimore. And this is a case, too, where the elected officials, the politicians, are not listening to the constituents. Because that's what I hear over and over again is how upset people are in Baltimore County over this bag fee. And it's not the stores. I think people are catching on to this. It's not the stores that want to charge you for a paper bag. The problem is the county is mandating that you must pay at least 5 cents for a paper bag. And if the store, so if you say, oh, Mr. Store Owner, please don't charge me for that bag. I just don't have the money. And he gives you that bag, they can get busted. You know, they have from the Department of Permits undercover people who come in. And they bust you handing out a free paper bag. Guess what? $500 fine.
That's so crazy.
Yes, and as Jay mentioned here, a lot of these legislation that comes from the county ends up on the state level. That Home Act we talked about, that was brought up in Baltimore County. It was defeated in Baltimore County, only to be introduced down there in Annapolis, and now the whole state has got to take these Section 8 vouchers. So this county issue of this bag ban, that's also been, because you don't have it in Harford County, but they've been trying real hard over the past sessions to introduce a statewide bag ban. And again, it's not necessarily a ban, it's also a bag fee mandate that you must pay more at the grocery store. I'm sorry, Kim. I want you to pay less at the grocery store, not more. My opponents seem real intent on you paying more at the store, and I want you to pay less.
Yeah. Well, Glenn, thank you for that. And that's the part that I don't get, right? Because these delegates, these state senators that vote for these things, they still live here, right? And they're not making a ton of money as a delegate. You're not making a ton of money as a state senator. You know, I would think, because these jobs, I mean, this is what, like yourself, this is what people are passionate about, right? You want to pass good legislation to impact Maryland and hopefully have a thriving state. That's why you do it. I don't understand how they go through with these things, because they, too, are being taxed as well. I guess that's the part I don't get.
Well, this is special interest at its worst, and unfortunately, there's a lot of special interest in politics. And sometimes it's a simple, and it's not necessarily a monetary donation, but it could even be an endorsement. So if you have a big organization, a big national organization like the Sierra Club, right? So two of our Republican members of the council, they were endorsed by the Sierra Club. And so as part of that endorsement, you know, the Sierra Club is real big on wanting this bag ban. So that was one of their legislative priorities. And guess what? That was the very first bill put in after, and it was not on any of their palm cards and say, hey, vote for me, you get this bag ban. But no, as soon as they were elected, bill number 2023 session, bill number one was this bag fee. And so a lot of it is the influence of the special interest groups like the Sierra Club. And then if you look at the financial reports, they're also available online. If you go to the Maryland State Campaign website, you can bring up all the financial reports. One of my opponents, Delegate Carl Jackson, if you look at his report, towing companies and liquor stores, donation after donation after donation. Where does he sit? He sits on a committee that has a lot of influence over liquor stores. How about that? Wow. What a coincidence. In Baltimore County, developers. Baltimore County is very, county council people are very powerful on zoning, what you can build on a property. Well, guess what? If you look at their financials, you see donation after donation after donation from developers. It's not illegal, mind you. I'm not saying it's illegal, but it definitely seems like it's a conflict of interest. Yes.
Definitely the influence.
So it's the endorsements, it's the donations, it's, you know, there's a lot of influence there, and that's why you, the voter, needs to get involved, you know, testify on these bills, and you do have the power if enough people speak out.
Thank you, Glenn. We'll be right back with Glenn Gilhar. All right, this has been a very informative hour. I wish I could give the credit to myself, but I can't. I got to give it to Glenn Gilhar. Glenn, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you for having me, Kim.
Yeah, real quick, I got a question here in the text line, but also I just want to make sure you mentioned this weekend, your big Christmas party?
Yes, Christmas party again at the Bowman Restaurant. The Bowman is also part of the WCUM 100-year history. Used to have a dance party when it was a music station back in the 1980s. So it's a big connection with WCBM. Again, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., Bowman Restaurant in the main dining room. It's more towards the back of the restaurant. Friends of GlennGilhar.org. Click on events. You'll find a ticket link. I'd love to have you. Your meal's included. You get great music, and you get to see my featured speaker, Kim Klasick, live.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. I appreciate that. Yes, guys, go out there, get those tickets. I will be eating dinner there with my little Olivia.
Yeah, I can't wait to see Olivia.
Yeah.
Hey, Brianna's off of work. She will be there. She absolutely adores Olivia, too.
Okay, great, great. It is a lot of fun.
Brianna's my daughter, but for this. Yeah.
Yes, I got a question here from Priscilla. I just wanted to ask you this.
Sure.
Baltimore County, she's asking, does Baltimore County pay for these undercover bag catchers? Because you mentioned how the stores could get fines
absolutely.
If they don't charge this fee to consumers,
right.
They get a $500 fine. So the undercover bag catchers, are they paid for by our tax dollars?
Absolutely. So, I mean, just like with liquor stores, how there's enforcement where they have, you know, undercover people say, oh, you didn't check for ID, and they'll write you up. Same thing. This is under, if you go to Baltimore County, was put in the bag ban. They call it the Bring Your Own Bag Act. But it talks about the enforcement. It's the Department of Permits. And, yes, they are county employees. And, yes, if they get a report that somebody's not charging or they go in there and catch you not charging for that bag, $500 fine for the retailers. And it's not just a one-time thing. You could be charged again and again. It can add up. So.
That's ridiculous. Oh, my gosh. You know, the things that we pay for as taxpayers in the state of Maryland, it does make you wonder why you live here. It really does.
But the retailers, the police, when you go out there and you go shopping and they say, hey, look, I need 5-10 cents for a bag. Remember, it's not them. They're doing what they have to do because of this mandate from the Baltimore County Council. And sadly, yes, Republicans on the council, lead sponsor had sponsored this was a Republican. And also Johnny Oshesky. So hopefully, the winds of change are happening. There's going to be some big turnover. President Trump is, he's going to make America great. We're going to have a thriving economy. And I'm hoping for that we're going to have some real changes here in Annapolis, in Towson for 2026. I am really hopeful, Kim.
Yeah, I'm hopeful as well. Again, Glenn Gilhart, thank you so much for coming in today. We're probably going to have you back, obviously, in Annapolis. They're going to be going into session soon. Would love to have you back to talk about some of the bills that will be introduced at that time, especially when it comes to the Maryland Reliability or Maryland Piedmont Reliability Project, because that's huge. And yes, a lot of people are talking about that. And a lot of state senators and delegates, like, we know where the Republicans stand on the issue. I haven't heard a whole lot from the other side of the aisle.
Exactly.
So it'll be interesting to see where they stand on that issue, because that is obviously a huge concern. Again, Glenn Gilhart, thank you so much for coming in today. Don't forget, he's got his big Christmas party at the Bowman Restaurant. They can pay as soon as they arrive, too.
Absolutely.
Right?
If they want to. You can pay at the door.
You can pay at the door, 6 to 8 p.m.
It has to be by check, though. I can't take cash.
That's true.
State rules.
Yes.
So pay by check, friends of Glenn Gilhart, or go online, click the ticket link.
All right. And I'll see you guys at that fundraiser. Coming up next, obviously, we're going to get some national issues and then also what happened at City Hall yesterday. Some comments about City Hall being toxic. We'll talk about it.
Kim Plasek Live starts now on Talk Radio 680, WCBM, and 99.9 FM in Harford County.
All right. Good morning to you. Wow. I have to tell you, I've got to ask you, if you're just joining us, where the heck have you been? We had Glenn Gilhart in studio. And as I mentioned before, he's just a wealth of knowledge. He knows exactly what's going on in Annapolis. He's running for the state delegate seat in District 8. And that's going to happen in 2026, but he's been knocking doors nonstop since he ran back in 2022. So if you can imagine, he knows everybody almost at this point in his district. But I love the fact that he goes, talks to people. He's got his big event coming up this weekend. I'm going to be there. As I mentioned, so is Olivia. It's Saturday, December 7th, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Bowman's Restaurant right there on Hartford Road in Parkville, Maryland. And as you mentioned, you can pay there at the door if you'd like to. But you can also go to Friends of Glenn Gilhart. And it's G-L-E-N with one N. And his last name is G-E-E-L-H-A-A-R. All right, Glenn Gilhart. Like I said, he's running for the Maryland House of Delegates. We didn't get a chance to talk about some of the things that are probably going to come up here as the session starts in Annapolis, but I asked Glenn to come back after the first week of the session just so we could talk about some of the bills that at that point would have been introduced. And it'll be interesting to see, especially with the juvenile justice reform and all these other things that we've been talking about on a daily basis, you know, what are they going to do about juvenile crime? And what do they plan to do about this Maryland Piedmont Reliability Project? I think those are going to be probably the two main concerns. You know, it's interesting because having Glenn on my team as I was running here this past election cycle was great, because a lot of times, and it's no fault to anybody else, you know, it does. It gets very confusing. A lot of times people will come to me, like if we're at an event or something, if they'll come up and talk to me, and they'll start asking me about bills that were introduced in Annapolis, and they want to know the ins and outs of Annapolis bills. And I'm like, wait, no. I'm heading to Congress, you know. And so, but it was great because with Glenn there, even at a lot of the phone banking, he knows about all of the bills. And so he'll say, hey, just give me the phone, right? And so he'll talk to people about the bills, and then he'll let them know exactly who they should be complaining to. And, you know, as he mentioned before he left, you know, whoever your state senator is or your delegate, now is the time to contact them about what you want to see in this upcoming session. Okay, so, you know, please do so. I also know that Delegate Nino Mangione has his Christmas party coming up tomorrow. And you know what? I wonder if he's able to come in and talk real quick about that, because I would love for you guys to go out to that party as well. You know, we have to support, we've got to support all of our state senators and our delegates in the Republican Party. You just have to. And I know it's hard. I know it gets to be cumbersome. And I know sometimes people look at donating to some of these candidates and you're thinking, oh gosh, another donation, another event. Let me just tell you, at the end of the day, what you will donate to some of these state senators and delegates is not what you'll end up paying later on in taxes and fees. You understand what I'm saying? Like, making sure that these Republicans are in office to fight back against some of these taxes and fees that they want to, you know, have on us, the taxpayers, it's easier and it's less costly to just donate to the delegate or the state senator so they can have that fight in Annapolis. And I know sometimes we don't look at it that way, but that's how I look at it. That's how I look at it. So I'll see if we can get Nino on the phone or something before the end of the show. So we'll see what we can do about talking about his upcoming fundraiser as well. I did want to talk about some more local issues. If you haven't noticed, gas prices have dropped another 8 cents. Hopefully that'll be a great thing. You know, hopefully we'll continue it to go down. As Glenn mentioned when he was here, you know, you had VP Harris talking about for years how she would ban fracking. She was against fracking. Then all of a sudden, you know, she's running for president. And then it's like, oh, more fracking. Well, we know for a fact that President Trump is for fracking. And if we get these energy costs under control, that is going to help with some of these gas prices and even some of the prices that we see at the grocery store, right? Because a lot of it is, you know, the cost to travel, right? The cost to get that product on the shelf. So it's, if we could get those costs down as far as oil, you know, we could see that as well for us as a consumers. Now, will it be a big drop? Probably not. Probably not. I mean, let's be honest. We're not going to see a huge drop in the inflated prices at the grocery store. Maybe for things that are like bread, eggs, milk, stuff like that. But right now, I mean, think about it. Mr. Doritos, whoever owns that, he's looking at this situation and saying, well, you paid it. You know, you're paying it. You're still buying Doritos, right? I mean, so some of these prices aren't going to go down. And that's another reason why when you're looking at the fact that we had 4 years of Biden, right? You had 4 years of someone that was against basically energy independence. And so Biden gave those people like Mr. Doritos the opportunity to raise their prices on you and I. And so had we remained with President Trump for another 4 years, a guy that was that wanted to be energy independent, that was obviously had us in that position, we wouldn't have seen the inflated prices that we see now. So again, of course, elections have consequences. But when you talk to people about, you know, Joe Biden's administration, you know, some people that might have seen the light and said, okay, well, yeah, I voted for Joe in 2020, but here in 2024, I did vote for Trump. But just know, there's a lasting effect here on what that this last 4 years will have on our future. That's the downside. That is the downside. We're not going to see a whole lot happen when it comes to the inflated prices. And so that's why VP Harris was like, we're going to go after price gouging. Well, the prices went up because of your stupid administration. I mean, I mean, if we're going after price gouging, we should go after you, Ms. VP Harris. Thanks to you, their prices went up. So anyways, I just wanted to make sure we talked about that really quickly. Also, you probably saw on the national stage, President Trump did weigh in. There was a hostage video that was posted by Hamas. And, of course, they still have American hostages. Now, this is something that we don't talk about often, but Hamas still has American hostages. And as you might have noticed, as soon as President Trump won his reelection, even the leaders of Hamas were talking about whether or not they were going to come to the table on anything. Now, I don't think that they will. But President Trump did weigh in after that hostage video was released, saying, look, all of this better be straightened out by January 20th or all hell to pay. All hell to pay. See, this is what an actual leader looks like, okay? This is why we needed an actual leader. And I wish, gosh, I wish upon a star that we had leadership in Maryland that was similar to President Trump or someone that actually meant business. We don't have that. Yesterday, I got to post my little meme that I like. And some people get a little offended by it. I don't really care. You know, be offended. I don't care. What are you going to say? Say it to my face? No. You can be offended. But, you know, when we talk about all of this gender reaffirming care and how taxpayers should pay for it, and it's ridiculous. Well, anyways, but the meme that I posted, and, you know, this guy has a sign. He's at some protest. And it says, if genitals don't define gender, how does removing them affirm it? That is the question there that nobody can seem to answer within the trans community. Because it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. You know, so at the end of the day, when you're thinking about President Trump, the way that he's talking about certain issues that we see that are trickling down to even us taxpayers, like this gender-affirming care that, you know, they have us paying here in the state of Maryland. Just think about how that'll affect us, and hopefully we'll get finally some relief when it comes to talking about all these trans issues that are affecting children. You know, this is all influenced. You know, they'll tell you, oh, little Jimmy wanted to be a girl. No, little Jimmy didn't know he could turn into a girl until his mama told him. This is all influence. And then little Jimmy goes to school with little Tommy, and now little Tommy seeing little Jimmy become Jane, and now Tommy's like, well, wow, if Jimmy can become Jane, I want to be Tammy, right? This is all influence. I had enough. And so I'm hoping there are things like this that we will not see any more of, because we'll have real leadership in the White House. I cannot wait. You have no idea. I can't wait. Well, I wanted to talk about some local issues here. First and foremost, look, I have nothing against Ryan Coleman and the Baltimore County NAACP. I think they're very involved in the community. I love the fact that they're very involved. My only concern, and my little bone to pick, and Ryan Coleman, if you're listening, you can call me anytime, 410-WCBM-680, 410-922-6680. My little bone to pick is the people that you support running for office, whether it's the Johnny Olszewskis of the world or, you know, the Carl Jacksons of the world, the delegate that we're just talking about with Glenn Gilhar. You support candidates that continue the mayhem. Like, you want somebody to do something about the juvenile crime, yet you support candidates that are fine with the juvenile crime. You see what I'm saying? Like, I don't understand that. You know, my team and I, we went to the gun buyback that the NAACP had in Baltimore County, and we had signs there, just say no to Johnny O. I thought that was, you know, cute. It was good. It was good. But one of the women with the Baltimore County NAACP, she comes over to me and she says, and I think I explained this to you, she says to me, she was like, well, you know, I know that you're out here because it's going to be a lot of people and you want to say, you know, to them that you're here, you're in the race. She said, but we're very excited about this gun buyback. And I asked her point blank. I said, do you think criminals are going to show up here today to hand over their guns? I mean, the police presence is, you know, overwhelming, number one. But do you think they're bringing in guns that they're using to rob people at gunpoint or murder? And she looked me dead in the eye. I wish I would have gotten her name. I know she's with the Baltimore County NAACP. She looked me dead in my eye and said, yes, I think this will get more guns off the streets. And it was at that moment that I knew stupidity knew no bounds. At that moment, I was like, wait a minute, what? You think that you're going to have some criminals coming up here dropping off their guns for what was it, $200, a gift card? If anything, they could sell the gun they have for $1,000 down to Penn North Avenue, you know, to somebody on the street. What are you talking about? They're not coming over here for $200. And they're not coming over here with this police presence. They're not doing that. She really believed it. I got some audio here. We're going to talk about it, you know, on the way. You know what? I'll save the audio till we get back. I just want to talk about this because, again, I have nothing against the NAACP of Baltimore County. I have nothing against Ryan Coleman. I don't have anything against you. I know that you mean well. You have good intentions. The road to hell was paved with good intentions. That's what I'm saying here. I think you have the right mindset and the right attitude, but you're going about it in a way that is getting us in more danger. And I know Ryan Coleman was sounding the alarm, talking about the trafficking going on at some of the hotels in Baltimore County, especially in Woodlawn. Ryan, I agree with you, and I believe it's a problem, and I believe it's happening that more than just Woodlawn hotels, okay? I'm right there with you. But if you're taking that information over to Baltimore County Executive Johnny Olszewski, let me tell you why nothing's being done about it. If you're taking that information over to Johnny Olszewski, he's not doing anything about it, hasn't done anything in years. Why do you think helping him get elected in District 2 would help you? Why do you think supporting some of these state senators and delegates will help you if they've been in these seats for years and haven't taken any of your complaints seriously for years? At what point do you say these aren't the people that are going to help us? When do you say that to yourself, Ryan Coleman? I really want to know this. Because at this point in time, it's plain insanity. Doing something over and over again, I don't get it. Now, I will also say during my race here in November, and of course I was running since, February all the way to November, I reached out to the League of Women Voters that usually always have a debate. They always have a debate, right, between the candidates, the Democrat and Republican. They even have primary debates. The League of Women Voters would not do a debate in District 2. I would love to know why. Ryan Coleman helped out with that debate last time around, last election cycle. I would love to know why. Why did you allow Johnny Olszewski and others to not have a debate and debate these issues? Why? When you continuously ask this man all the time to help you with these local issues, why did you allow him to skirt the debate? Simple question. I'm not mad. Not mad. I just have questions. When we get back, we're going to talk about some of the carjacking happening in Towson. We're also going to talk about some of the audio here from Mackenzie Frost. She's on the case, of course. Now, if you didn't notice, juvenile crime is up. No, not nationally. Just here in the state of Maryland. We'll talk about it. All right. You know, earlier today, we had Glenn Gilhar running in District 8 in 2026. Got an early start on it. We were mentioning his fundraiser this weekend, but I also wanted to bring in Delegate Nino Mangione. Thank you so much for coming in. I want to make sure you mention your fundraiser that's coming up as well, because obviously supporting the delegates and the senators that actually go to Annapolis to work for us, we got to continue to do this.
Thank you very much, Kim, for having me. I appreciate the chance to give a little shout-out here. And, of course, Merry Christmas to you and Happy Holidays to everybody in the listening audience. And, yes, we've started a tradition. We did it, maybe 2 years ago. We started and we had our kind of a Christmas celebration. And we decided we're going to do it every year. So next year, or next week, December the 12th, it is at Hayfields Country Club. You can get more information at ninoformd.com. You can click there. There's a pop-up where you can get tickets. There's also the flyer at my Facebook page. Check it out. And if you're looking for all that's going to be happening in the upcoming session, be sure to follow us on Facebook, because we're always updating some of the bills and legislation that goes on. But, yeah, thank you so much. It's next week, December 12th, Hayfields, and you can get tickets on the link at our Facebook or website, ninoformd.com.
Thank you, Delegate. I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We're looking forward to a great event.
Thank you. And I know a lot of people text in. They miss Nino at this hour, and I do too. But he's got to fight hard for us in Annapolis, and this is what I'm talking about. At the end of the day, supporting our state delegates and state senators at fundraisers is going to cost us less in the long run, because we want them fighting for us so that they don't raise taxes and fees on us later down the line. Okay? Just trust me on this one. Trust me. All right. So as you heard there, December 12th at Hayfields. Okay. Also, real quick, we were talking about the carjackings in Towson. I was talking about the Baldwin County NAACP and Ryan Coleman, because for some reason, they're always asking the same questions. And I do wonder, when are you going to support different candidates? It doesn't have to be me. You don't have to support me. When are you going to support different candidates that actually take your concerns seriously? Because right now, I feel like you're screaming into this black hole. Take a listen to the audio that we have here with Ryan Coleman speaking to Fox 45.
It's important to note that this attempted carjacking happened in the parking garage. Now, police say the suspects were aged 13 to 17 years old. And police also say several of those suspects were actually involved in an assault the day before. Now, police say they're stepping up their patrols.
With the holiday season in full swing, in the midst of shopping at the Towson Town Center, Ryan Coleman, the president of the Randallstown NAACP, says he's concerned about the crime.
I am worried that this is going to keep happening, because does keep happening.
Attempted carjacking. We have a vehicle, and he's here with a victim, but it's attempted carjacking.
Baltimore County police just arrested five teens after an attempted carjacking around 8 p.m. Saturday night in the parking garage around the 800 block of Delaney Valley Road. One teen was just 13 years old.
13 years old. Now, again, as you heard there from Ryan Coleman, president of the Baltimore County NAACP of Randallstown, you heard him say there, of course, I'm afraid it's going to keep happening because it does keep happening. But Ryan, when do we look in the mirror here? Again, I think your intentions are great. I think you're doing a fantastic job remaining in the community and voicing your concerns. Honestly, you work much harder than any NAACP president I've seen my entire life. But at what point in time do you say to yourself, I can't keep screaming at the same people. I can't keep calling out the same issues. Because at some point in time, you've got to say, it's the people that I'm helping win re-election. They're the ones that can change all of this. And so, it makes you wonder, because I don't know Ryan Coleman well at all. But the way I see him, very passionate on local news, I will say he is not somebody that's in on the take. He doesn't seem to be in on the take. He seems to be a guy that's very passionate about the issues like you and I. And so I have to wonder, why do we keep doing this over and over again? That's just my question for you. Again, Ryan Coleman, if you're out there, if anybody with the Baltimore County NAACP wants to reach out, please do so. Excuse me, 410-WCBM-680, 410-922-6680. I would love to ask you these questions myself. I really would. I asked a couple people for his contact. Of course, they didn't give it to me. They're like, Kim, you're just going to yell at him. I'm not going to yell at him. I'm not. I really do believe that he's a force in the community. But if you are telling all of those that follow you to continue to vote for the Democrats that allow this to continue to happen, what good are you doing for those that you want to help? You see, it's just not making any sense. It really isn't. All right. As I mentioned, this is not a national trend. The carjacking, the juvenile crime, all these things that you're seeing right now, it's not a national trend. It is happening in the state of Maryland. You've got people in leadership roles that either are making money off the fact that it's very violent, they're making money on the fact that these criminals and these juveniles are committing crimes like this. We did hear about how much money the public defenders are making off of juvenile crime. It's a lot. We talk about the nonprofits that supposedly have these wraparound services. They're making a lot on juvenile crime. The only way that you're going to change this, if you change leadership, and those leaders don't allow this to continue to happen. Coming up next, we're going to talk about all these juvenile arrests. Mackenzie Frost of Fox 45 has been on the case. I got some audio to play for you, and you might be shocked. All right, we're talking about juvenile crime. I know. It's a recurring topic. Not because it's a national trend and we're seeing juveniles all over the country wreaking havoc and mayhem. No, just happening here in Maryland. Congratulations. If you live in the state of Maryland, well, congrats to you. Our incompetent leadership at the top of the notch there. And I would say Governor Wes Moore, to Department of Juvenile Services Secretary Vincent Schiraldi, to our amazing Democrats that will soon be in session in Annapolis. And even those on county and city councils as well that seem to believe that for some reason a juvenile could make a decision to change their gender, but they cannot make the decision or the distinction between right and wrong when robbing somebody at gunpoint. Yes. Like, just imagine trying to explain that at the gates of heaven, right? I mean, like, think about that. Do you think God is going to put up with any of that? No, he's not. I mean, it's so wild to me because I am one of those people where I definitely fear God, okay? There's no way in the world would I believe that I'm going to heaven after living a life where I could say, oh, yes, let that 8-year-old change her gender. That's how she feels inside. Put her on puberty blockers. Yes, as Glenn pointed out, you know, make sure she's not a biological mother some point in time in her life. Who cares? But no, if she commits a crime, she didn't know what to do. I'm so sorry your grandmother's now dead. Like, just think about this. Think about it. It makes zero sense. Again, these are the people running the state. Well, anyways, Mackenzie Frost, you know, I don't know if you guys watch Paw Patrol, if you have kids that young, but you know how they say Chase is on the case? Mackenzie Frost is on the case, okay? And she's not letting up. She's not letting up. You know, we're going to talk about these numbers here and the amount of arrest, when it comes to juveniles. And I look at this number, and I knew it was going to be pretty high. I just didn't know it was going to be this high. Take a listen.
Fox 45 News is looking into new data, giving some new insight into young people and ankle monitors. Fox 45's Mackenzie Frost is demanding answers.
Right now, the Department of Juvenile Services isn't saying much. However, we obtained new data from the Baltimore Police Department showing at least 70 juvenile arrests have been made within the last month.
Changes are underway in Maryland when it comes to juvenile crime. November 1st brought new juvenile justice laws, expanding who can face charges, extending probation length, and getting state's attorney's offices involved sooner in charging decisions. Fox 45 News obtaining data from Baltimore Police. From November 2nd through December 1st, there have been 70 arrests made of young people brought to juvenile booking for review. These kids accused of crimes like carjacking, stolen auto, robberies, and more. 21 arrests for stolen auto, 24 for robbery, 5 kids arrested for carjacking, some as young as 12 years old. Most of these crimes fall under the new DJS policies requiring ankle monitors to be used if the young offender is not detained upon arrest. We reached out to DJS Monday asking for the number of kids placed on ankle monitors, either electronic monitoring or GPS, since the policy shift October 1st. The total number of kids currently on both types of ankle monitors, and how many kids have been referred to prosecutors' offices for charges since the start of November. A spokesperson for DJS acknowledged our questions, but has yet to provide the data.
And I don't think they're going to provide it anytime soon. I hope that they do, but I mean, let's just take a look at this. 70 arrest of juvenile offenders. How many times have we heard the story where a juvenile was arrested but was not detained? I would love to know the difference there on those numbers. As Mackenzie Frost pointed out, how many of them are on the monitor system? You know, the ankle bracelet. How many are on that? And what's going on? I also wonder, the monitoring system, I guess that's the same system Marilyn Mosby's on, right? What? So... Shame on me. But I do wonder, why doesn't she just do what she wants? Because the juveniles have clearly showed that no one's actually monitoring those ankle bracelets. So, Marilyn, do you really need the pardon? I don't know. Anyways, I would love to know how many of those arrested have been actually detained. As she pointed out, how many are actually going in front of a prosecutor? I also would like to know the money made in all this. And I don't think we'll ever get that number. Obviously, it could be a rhetorical question, but I would love to know, at least get an estimate on how much money is being made here, because many of these juveniles, as we've heard time and time again, have public defenders. The wraparound services come from these social service companies, right, or the nonprofits. They're getting money also from the city, from the state, what have you. How many of these public defenders prefer these kids to certain social services or wraparound services, whatever you want to call them, to people that also donate a specific amount of money to even some of these people that are in office? See, to me, it's just like, it's like this huge cycle, and you got to be part of this in crowd. And if you're not part of the in crowd, then you are left out of this completely. And not only will they not use your services, if you have an idea, right, an idea to come forth and say, here's how we could fix this problem, they usually don't even, you know, acknowledge your idea. And I will say this. If you ever listen to Doc Cheatham, who's, you know, called into the show plenty of times, Doc Cheatham is very involved in his community there in the Matthew Henson neighborhood. And as you heard probably recently, they made many strides without any shootings or murders in their area. You know, they asked for support, similar to, you know, whether it was getting Safe Streets or the GVRS, all that stuff from Mayor Brandon Scott and others, but they're not part of that in crowd. So they never end up getting any of those services. They're not brought into the fold, but he's proven that what they're doing in Matthew Henson actually works. So you would think a Mayor Brandon Scott would say, oh, well, you know what? they got it right, Matthew Henson. Let's also expand whatever they're doing, you know, out to maybe the Cherry Hill area or things like that, you know, or even Sandtown, Winchester, whatever. But they never do that because Doc isn't part of the crew. You see? But these people that are part of the crew, they're making a ton of money off of this. A ton of money. Now, I will also say, in case I left it out, we were looking at car thefts in Maryland. When it comes to the national average, we exceed that national average of car thefts by 118%. So as I said, this is not a national trend. This is happening just in Maryland because of the leadership we currently have. I really do hope that you have people that step up big time in this session coming up in Annapolis. Of course, Republicans always step up. Look, the Republicans in this state, God bless you. We know that you're about law and order. We see it time and time again. The problem is the Republicans are in the minority, right? This is why we have to support people like Glenn Gilhar, right? We have to continue to support people like Nino Mangione, because if we don't at least have those fighters, those warriors, we're definitely not getting anywhere. But our goal here is hopefully to get the majority. And so if we can do that, that'd be great. But I look at this situation and I think to myself that at some point in time, the Democrats are going to have to make a change here. If you saw in New York City, you've got the prosecutor, Alvin Bragg. And yes, that's the same guy that was, you know, trying to take Trump down. And, you know, you got Letitia James. You got all these people up there that have been trying to take Trump down since the day he announced that he was running for re-election. Lucky for us, they were not successful in that, right? But if you missed it, Alvin Bragg has an assistant in his office that was apparently robbed and assaulted. And when they finally caught the suspect, they found out it was somebody that had been, you know, in and out of, you know, City Hall and, of course, the police department and, of course, the prosecutor's offices, because it was somebody that they knew very well and he was a repeat violent offender. I do believe, and I don't wish this on anybody, but I do believe at some point in time it's going to come full circle. Okay? There's only so many people in the area, in the Baltimore region. There's only so many people in the state of Maryland. At some point in time, and, you know, those that rob people at gunpoint or the carjackers, they're not asking you where you work. They're not asking you what party you're affiliated with, right? And of course, you don't want to see that happening, but what else is there left? Because they're letting them literally run amok. Run amok. And so I don't know what it's going to take for them to turn that corner. I don't know what it's going to take for Governor Wes Moore to finally say that he's got, you know, I'm going to fire Vincent Schiraldi. It's not working. Vincent Schiraldi went through how many jobs before he got here, right? He was in New York. He was in D.C. Everybody that he worked with said that this guy has no idea what he's doing and that he made things much more dangerous while he was there. So why on earth would Governor Wes Moore say, oh, yeah, that's the guy we need in Maryland? And then to see these numbers, and he still says, that's the guy that we need in Maryland. It's not making much sense now, is it? Unless, because what else makes sense? Unless it's money, right? Money talks. What is the financial gain there? I wanted to know, Mayor Brandon Scott, he has his big ceremony today. He's going to be sworn in for his second term. Congratulations to you, Brandon Scott. I hope that you do well this time around. I don't foresee it happening, but we'll see what happens. Yesterday, he did post a graphic. I'll read it for you here. He says, as of this morning, this is yesterday, homicides are down 23.9% and non-fatal shootings are down 33.6% year to date. He says these reductions are on top of the roughly 20% drop in homicides we saw in 2023. Now, he goes on to thank people for these drops. Now, you know me, I don't think that there are drops. I think there is, you know, different things that are happening. If there's a little bit of drop, I would say it would be Ivan Bates and Eric Barron, right, doing their job. I would say that they're also spreading a lot of the crime out across the state. But here's what Brandon Scott said. He says, while the data demonstrates the progress we are making around public safety, these are more than just numbers. They are 58 fewer lives lost to violence and 198 Baltimoreans who do not have to go through the pain and trauma associated with being a victim of gun violence. He says these reductions would not be possible without each and every resident, community partner, agency, and law enforcement personnel working together to build a better, safer Baltimore. He says this progress is promising, and we cannot and will not rest until no Baltimorean is lost to violence in our great city. Brandon Scott says, as I hear the start of my second term, as I near the start of my second term as mayor, my priority is ensuring we are able to sustain our momentum. We will continue to approach public safety right away by supporting both the brave men and women, get this, at the Baltimore Police Department and evidence-based violence prevention and intervention efforts through Monzie. The end. He did not thank State's Attorney Ivan Bates. He did not thank U.S. Attorney Eric Barron. They somehow was left out of all of this. And it is in my view that they are left out because he does not see that they were instrumental in dropping any of these numbers. It is in my view that there could possibly still be a little beef there. I don't know. I don't know either one of them personally. But to post all of these reduction numbers and to not mention State's Attorney Ivan Bates at the very least of it just shows exactly where the mayor's head is at. Again, he's being sworn in today for his second term. I also wanted to bring to your attention that Mayor Scott announced that they are now decreasing the police department. Now, we talked about this. It was inevitable. And we talked about the fact that now voters have voted for him to take complete control of the Baltimore Police Department, which, again, made zero sense. But I can't make sense of anything that goes on in Baltimore City. It's almost like being in, like, the Twilight Zone. I can't make sense of it. But that is what they voted on, and it was a ballot question. They voted for Mayor Scott to take control. Mayor Scott has decided he's going to put more money into Safe Streets and decrease the funding for Baltimore City the Police Department. You're going to have, even though there's a shortage right now, police, you're going to have even less police in the department. Is that what you voted for? Again, this is why I call out people like Ryan Colbin with the Baltimore County NAACP, because I know for a fact this is not something that I think you wanted. But where were you when the ballot initiative came out that they were going to put the police department under the control of the mayor and city hall? These are issues you should have taken to the forefront. These are issues where you say, I don't know why this keeps happening. No, this is why. This is why. So you're going to have not just less police officers on the force. If you notice there, with this announcement, what he's going to do is actually put more civilians into the administrative role. Let's talk about that for a second. Let me sit up in my seat real quick. Civilians in the administrative roles. Now, let's just for a moment talk about what we've heard from the Department of Public Works. There are many of you that have texted this text line here at WCBM. You've called in. Many of you that listen to the show have said time and time again that there are people that work with the Department of Public Works that purposely make things hard for individuals that like to come forward and complain, especially on certain local channels. We heard from City Councilman Yitzi Schleifer. When he was going up to bat against DPW with the city council, calling out the problems that they had, whether it was picking up trash, whether or not they were getting the right PPE. Remember even all that during COVID? There were a lot of people at DPW that said that they didn't have the right equipment to wear. They were picking up hazardous materials. They were very uncomfortable about it. You see what's been happening, unfortunately, with some of the sanitation workers. You see the deaths now. You see, what the Inspector General has been talking about. After he made all this noise at City Council, if you recall, City Council against Yitzi Schleifer then came forward and said that the trash was not picked up on his block for, I don't know if it was one cycle, a week cycle, or what have you, because he spoke out against DPW. He said he then called DPW. I'll never forget this. He called DPW and said, hey, I think you might have missed my entire block on trash day. He said he, at that point, didn't even tell them who he was. They knew who he was. They said, oh, don't worry, sir. We'll get on it. They hung up the phone. The next day, the trash collectors arrived. They knew exactly what they did, and they knew exactly who they did it to. You see, when you're talking about putting civilians in at the police department, and again, this is a police department that had issues. Remember, there was somebody that ended up getting a job there, and he was wanted for murder, and a detective saw him in the elevator, and that's how they ended up that's how they ended up figuring out that he was there working. I'm not saying that that's going to happen. I'm not saying it's that extreme. But what I'm saying is you're going to end up getting people in there that I believe that are going to be also, they call them 50 percenters, right? They got 1 foot in the game and 1 foot out. There's a lot of people that work at Safe Streets with 1 foot in the game and 1 foot out. What I think that we are going to see is an even more dangerous Baltimore City. We'll discuss when we get back. All right, we'll continue to see what decrease in the police department in Baltimore City will bring us. Hopefully we'll get some actual numbers here soon. I would love to know how much is going to be cut from the budget. I would love to know how many police officers will be cut. I wonder if we're now going to say that we don't have a police shortage. Right? I mean, there's a lot of questions here. Now, yesterday you had city council members stand up and bid their farewell. Of course, you have... You have four council members that will not be back. They were not voted back in or they're stepping down completely. Councilman Christopher Burnett did not run for re-election. You had Councilman Robert Stokes and Councilman Eric Costello, along with City Council President Nick Mosby, that will also not be returning in the next session here in Baltimore City Council. Excuse me. Now, I will note, if you follow Emily Opayo, she is with, I believe it's the Baltimore Sun. Or is she with the Baltimore Banner now? Let me check. Let me make sure. I don't want to say the wrong thing. She is with the Baltimore Banner, formerly with the Baltimore Sun. She had on her Twitter feed, or X, whatever you want to call it, some of the outgoing messages that many of them had. I just wanted to bring that to you. The outgoing Baltimore Councilman Robert Stokes says he is leaving with his head held high. I'm going to keep my head up. I don't owe nobody but the residents and the good Lord. Okay. Now, Robert Stokes, I actually saw him once at one of the Preaknesses. A really nice guy, actually. Really nice guy. Came up, gave me a hug, believe it or not. Said, hey, you know what? I respect the fact that you stand up for what you believe in. So, Robert Stokes, wish you well. See what you're going to do next. This is one I thought was interesting. Baltimore Councilman Christopher Burnett. Now, this is the one that didn't run for re-election. He wasn't beat. He didn't run for re-election. For his final goodbyes, he apparently had a tweet out calling City Hall toxic. Yes, that was Councilman Christopher Burnett. But he deleted that tweet. I guess that he had a tweet out recently is what it said, but that he deleted that tweet. And then last night he had an emotional, like, thanking the voters and, made his dream come true by being there. So, you know, I searched high and low to see if anybody had a screenshot of that deleted tweet, but I could not find it. But apparently he's the one that called City Hall toxic. I believe it. Outgoing Baltimore Councilman Eric Costello says he'll be finishing his term the same way he came in, wearing a blue suit, white shirt, red tie, and unabashedly not talking to the media. Councilman Costello, I just want you to know this. When you've got the local media there, they're not there to give you a hard time. They're there because they have questions that we, the people, have. So a lot of your constituents probably want answers to the questions that the media is asking you that you've been avoiding. And I'm not telling you what to do in the future. I will just say, perhaps that's why you weren't reelected. Okay, so you're walking away not talking to the press, but that might have hurt you in the long run. Real quick, if you remember or recall, Christopher Burnett, when all this started crumbling, it was because of the, if you remember the shooting that happened outside of a Popeyes at Emerson Village, and a resident showed up there. They were very upset with him, and they called him out on it, and I could see then that he was just done with everything that was going on. But he's also the one that introduced the legislation to basically penalize anybody that didn't use someone's correct pronouns. So, Councilman Christopher Burnett, I doubt anybody's going to miss you, but I wish you well. All right. I want to say thank you to Glenn Gilhar for coming in today. I think he did a great job breaking everything down. Don't forget, he's got his fundraiser at the Bowman this Saturday, December 7th. That's in Parkville from 6 to 8 p.m. On the 12th, don't forget, Nino Mangione's got his fundraiser at Hayfield. So you can go to his website and check it out. I will talk to all of you tomorrow at 9 o'clock. I'm sure we'll have lots to discuss. Brian, as always, thank you for a great show. And I'll talk to you all tomorrow.